Göbekli Tepe, located in southeastern Turkey, stands as a testament to the ancient ingenuity and spiritual inclinations of our distant ancestors. Dating back over 11,000 years, this archaeological marvel predates the advent of agriculture, challenging conventional theories about the emergence of complex societies. Imagine a landscape of rolling hills where buried beneath the earth lie immense stone circles, some weighing up to 20 tons. These circles, intricately carved with depictions of animals and elaborate symbols hinting at a sophisticated belief system and a communal effort beyond what was previously thought possible for its time. Graham Hancock is a British author and journalist. He is best known for his writings on unconventional theories about ancient civilizations, lost civilizations, and alternative interpretations of archaeological and historical evidence. Sometimes Graham's work intersects with Göbekli Tepe. Graham believes that there may have been advanced civilizations predating what mainstream archaeology recognizes. Now, in this episode of the Say What Again, Billy podcast, the crew explains the significance of Göbekli Tepe and how they believe Graham's theories about history are more plausible than people think. An episode filled with critical thinking, research, and theories. The Swab crew will give you an ancient civilization episode about one of the most intriguing finds in archaeology to date. This episode of the Say What Again, Billy podcast begins now.
Nikki, we're back for another episode.
I love it, Billy. I love it. I love it. Some days are good, some days are bad, but I'm so glad we're here.
Well, Joey was supposed to be on with us, so an explanation for everybody. Joey's job is being a little bit more, how should we say, energized for the holiday season. So he's been being called up a lot, spur of the moment things, and unfortunately, he was unable to join us tonight. It was supposed to be his triumphant return. And a subject that I hope that Nick and I will make him proud in, because this is really his forte. But we gotta you know, man the ship and be the first mate on this episode for Joey and make him proud, because we're talking about one of his favorite subjects, ancient civilizations, but in particularly Göbekli Tepe.
See, now I know you're a Star Wars fan, so you might not get this, but make it so, number one. It's a Star Trek reference, so hopefully you get that. Joey, you know, when you're listening, Billy just explained Joey's job is very energized. That's a good way to put it, right? And he's being called up a lot more. And so I did some last minute Nick's additional notes to Nick's regular notes, okay, in the side and perspective where I think Joey would approach it. So I hope to really nail this in that perspective. You know, the history side of it, that's fairly easy for me to do my research on. The alternative theory side of it, which is where I know Joey is, this is his bread and butter, because I've listened to the episodes before and I know, have conversations with the guy. So Joey, if you're listening, if I get this wrong, blame Billy.
Well, Joey, we're going to make you proud. We're going to attempt to make you proud because you were not able to attend tonight. But don't worry, for fans of Joey, and we know there's a lot of fans out there of Joey, in the next few weeks.
Did you say only fans of Joey?
Yeah, only fans of Joey. 100% he should do that. But anyways, no, he'll be back eventually, hopefully for maybe next week's episode. Next week's going to be more of a story from someone else that's coming on, but I'll get into that at the end of the episode of this one. But we got a nice episode lined up. We're going to make Joey proud. It's about an ancient civilization and something that involves another person who is the center of controversy. He's been on shows like Joe Rogan. He's been on television shows. He recently had a Netflix documentary, and that's Graham Hancock. So he's basically intertwined with this episode. And an advance notice, we still have kittens in our studio running around. So if you hear the little litter box in the background and the cat toys, we do apologize. We're doing our best to not pick that up. But eventually these kittens are going to be out of here, and I think my mom is going to take them.
And they are definitely awesome little cats. I mean, I took one home, and
other than clipping his nails, because he likes to be very playful when he's by his scratch post, and he's caught me a couple times. There's really no things. I've never had cats before in my life, and this is a learning experience for me. But he's teaching me. I'll put you that way.
Well, I'm glad you took one of them. These two guys, I love them. They're nice. They're cuddly. They're fun. But they're overstaying their welcome here. But anyways, this edition of Nick's Notes is brought to you by Spotify for Podcasters. If you have a podcast idea and you need a way to get it out there, download Spotify for Podcasters to get started.
Well, thank you for that lovely introduction there, Billy. So this first portion of Nick's Notes is legitimately just research-based stuff. And as we go along, you'll forgive me. Some of it was crimped together, so it's not as my usual. If it doesn't sound like it's up to my usual stuff, I apologize, folks. But let's start with the hard facts, okay? So approximately, Göbekli Tepe was built, give or take, by dating methods that we have available to us, approximately 11 to 11,500 years ago, maybe even a little closer to 12,000 years ago. It predates Stonehenge, and you know how much I love Stonehenge. Predates Stonehenge by 6,000 years.
Remember when Stonehenge was the biggest thing?
Yeah. You know what? Stonehenge is still big because it's just more well-known. But GT, I'm going to say GT for short, just so we can kind of, that's Göbekli Tepe. It's definitely worth it when you look into it. So it was brought to primary fame by a German archaeologist, Klaus Schmidt. Okay, practice that. It's found near Urfa, a province in Turkey, and it literally translates, the name translate Göbekli Tepe translates to belly hill, because when they found it, it was almost as if it was a belly in the ground, like the circular mound that was over on top of it looked like a hill or a belly, like, you know, like when you're looking at someone's belly and it just looks kind of overly round, okay? Not Joey's, but normal one, and so it literally translates to belly hill. Now, an interesting thing here is that they do have more than 20 circular structures built into once they got it all excavated, the largest of which is approximately 20 meters or 65 and a half feet in diameter, which, to give you some perspective of 65 and a half feet, that's about a third. No, it's about from the end zone to the 20-yard line of a football field, okay, in diameter. That's just diameter. That doesn't count breadth. That doesn't count the entire distance and circumference of the circle. We're just talking about from end to end.
Speaking of end zones, when's the last time the Jets have seen the end zone?
8 touchdowns in 10 games, you tell me. Okay, that's not good math.
No, it's not.
Okay, I was at that game, and it was brutal, and we stayed till the very end. Oof. Yeah. Anyway, back to Göbekli. See, this is so tough for me to say. Göbekli Tepe. It's off surrounded. So these 20 circular structures, they have a lot of surrounding by these elaborately carved pillars, and they're T-shaped pillars. So just imagine a giant T, and that's how they're shaped. And on these pillars, mostly human, but then you see a lot of etchings of creatures, such as lions, scorpions, foxes,
oh my,
crows. Oh my, and vultures. Vultures, we're going to get back to that in a second. And the choice of these creatures is very, very important. And I'll talk to that in a second. Okay. Now, all of these pillars, they're carved out of limestone that needed to be moved by hand. And some of these things are tons. So the people that were moving them were insanely strong by today's standards. So these, you know, it wasn't one person, but when you say tons and you have just hand movement, no wheels, no ramps, no nothing like that, they were moving it horizontally across the land.
That's what archaeologists say.
Correct. Right. So right. In the dating, in the regular perspective, I should say the baseline perspective of how archaeology sees this, these people moved it by – people moved it by hand.
So these, I'm not cutting you off, I'm just adding on and asking a question. So these very smart archaeologists, right, literally are saying that these people of the time in Göbekli Tepe in southeastern Turkey are moving 20-ton stones by hand.
I don't know if they were all 20 tons. Maybe the biggest ones, the two biggest ones, might be up to 20 tons. But here's the trick, right? Yes, that's what they're saying. And we'll get into accepted science versus science.
And this is 11,000 years. So this is like
12,000, closer to 12.
So this is predating the pyramids of Giza.
Correct. What are they? The 10,000, correct?
I know Göbekli Tepe is, from what I heard and read, that it's before. And that's one thing that intrigues Joey.
Göbekli Tepe is alleged to be the first site of communal prayer or communal gathering that we know of in human, and when I say human, we use that loosely because these aren't humans we know now, human history. Okay, again, all accepted modern science. This isn't like an out there theory that somebody's just throwing out there. Oh, this is the first one. No, this is all accepted based on carbon dating, which isn't perfect because we've proven that carbon dating isn't legitimately
inaccurate.
Right. It is inaccurate, but so are our smartwatches. The good thing is when you do everything by the same methodology, you do develop some sort of pattern. So if it's off by X, it's off by X for everything. We don't know what the X factor is, but we do know that it's at least consistent, and that's important, right? So here's the thing, though. When you're also looking at this temple, there's no evidence when they first started excavating this of attempted domestication of plants or animals, which was much more prevalent a little later in time. So why build this communal site if there is no domesticated plant, meaning agriculture like we know it, where we can grow in the ground, or domesticated animals, and I don't mean like cats. I mean like horses to plow or cows to, you know, to graze, sheep, things of that nature. Why would you build it? See, the accepted before Göbekli Tepe was we did the domestication, and then once we had this domestication, then we kind of came together in these larger groups to protect it. Göbekli Tepe kind of reinvents how society is first formed. It flips it on its head. So, you know, Schmidt, when he founds this, is, like I said, typically up till then, group gathered at accepted communal code, and then the structured housing began. Well, at Göbekli Tepe, it's the other way around. At least this is how Schmidt finds it, right? The temple is first and the society forms around it. That had never been the case of archaeology before that. We'd always seen society form and then come together. They're going, wow, they must really like this theory. So that's wild and weird because you're really, this discovery is taking what science knows and flipping it on its head. And it took a lot of people a lot of time to accept this, but it is mostly, again, accepted by the scientific community. In fact, so much so that, you know, and this is German magazine, they're digging in Turkey. I know it's a German archaeologist, so it's being funded by Germany. But the magazine's called Der Spiegel, and it compares the fertile grasslands around the site of Göbekli Tepe to the Garden of Eden. And I'm going to get back to that in a little while. But it's interesting because this also predates Christianity by 10,000 years. Predates even the Abrahamic religions by 6,000 years. Because if we go to Judaism, which is the oldest of those three traditions.
So this is, people are, I haven't heard this yet. And again, ancient civilizations really isn't my thing, except for a little bit of the Egyptian stuff. But people are trying to say this is possibly the Garden of Eden.
I don't know if people are trying to say that. They've labeled it that way. And I kind of, as I'm reading it, could understand the connection. It exists 6,000 years before the books that we read about the Garden of Eden were even thought about. Right? Because when you talk about Abrahamic traditions, you talk about the monotheistic religions. And there's the three. There's Judaism. There's Islam, and there's Christianity. And we talked about the order of which comes first, Judaism, then Islam, then Christianity. That's kind of the order that, you know, we can date it. And but this temple exists 6,000 years beforehand in a location that, when I talk about a little bit later, if you read the book and you interpret the book a certain way, the books, it could be construed as the Garden of Eden. It could be this is where man came out of. Now, there's a reason for that. Again, historically, I will get to that. I just want to kind of like go through what we've got. And then when we get there, that's kind of where it becomes a little wonky, where you can't really prove. Right now, I'm just talking to you about proven, and what you can't see, folks, is I'm doing air quotes because it's science proves this stuff. So reinvented again. Now, Schmidt's dead. Schmidt has died, okay, and he's got a successor. Name is Lee Clair. He dug even deeper than Schmidt had, and evidence of houses and year-round settlements are found. Evidence of a cistern to collect rainwater, tools to process grain for cooking porridge, and brewing beer, which is interesting. Beer and porridge. And what's fun there is when they did this, Göbekli Tepe was really more like there was no houses. There was no structures for living. There was just, this was a gathering site. So they really, it wasn't homes to anybody. But then as you dug deeper, you did eventually find these little or smaller structures that do kind of represent that. Similar structures, at least a dozen other settlements with similar structures are found around this area. And it becomes known as, it's called now, you know, the Pyramids of Southeast Turkey. So when you look at it, it's kind of wild or fantastic to think about because it's almost as if it's built in a very similar structure to how Egyptians are built, where the people, the culture is kind of a little spaced out, but all around this central location. And then one last thing, and I know you want to jump in. One last thing is this was viewed when the science really dug into this, most scientists will kind of view this, or at least the contradictory viewpoint of this being so historical in like the basis for everything. Some other scientists will view this as the last bastion. This is a group of hunter-gatherers who near the end of the Paleolithic era, where that hunter-gatherer is going away and we're getting more to that agricultural side where we're domesticating grain and beer. Think of it like doomsday preppers, right? They've got their little, you know, stations in the wood. They've got their shelters in the woods and they got everything ready. Well, that's what they're saying Göbekli Tepe was, a bastion of these hunter-gatherers who don't want to give up their way of life. So they kind of all just surround themselves. There. Right. And the carvings are the clue. Remember I talked to you about these animals? Well, they're predators. Leopards, foxes, serpents, vultures. These are all hunters. They're all predator-like animals.
Vultures aren't really.
Well, they're carrion, right? They will go after. So they're not prey. They're more, they'll come in after the hunters, but they're still gathering the materials that's already been hunted.
Scavengers.
Right. Mm. And so, but they're not waiting to be picked off. They are the ones picking off the leftovers from the hunters. They're not domesticating anything. They're not breeding anything. They're not waiting for anything. They're kind of just picking apart what's there. So that's important as far as all that's concerned to kind of seeing that. That could go with the theory that these are just kind of like, oh no, I'm buckling down, I'm zoning in, and that's it. This is where I'm staying. Come get me. Right?
Also, side note, you could never work at my job because the way you just jumped right there, you probably shit your pants 16 times a day. But proceed.
I was not expecting it. I'm sure after a while you get used to it. I was just like, wow, there he goes. Or she. Now, we get a new lease on life, right? Turkey's group, I'm going to mispronounce this probably because it's got a whole bunch of symbols over it and I never know how to do that. The Dogis Group, along with the National Geographic Society, is giving $15 million over 20 years in partnership to kind of keep Göbekli Tepe upkept, to help with the
preservation
and all of that kind of stuff. Now, I mentioned to you there's smaller sites in the general vicinity. That's called the Pyramids of Southeast Turkey. They're smaller in scope. So the giant pillars, the giant T-shaped pillars, and these the 20-ton ones are in Göbekli Tepe, but you have smaller versions in similar sites up to 125 miles away. So this is why it becomes like this smaller community or this larger community. Almost like these smaller sites are almost like you make it seem like Göbekli Tepe is a cathedral. And all these smaller sites are like just churches. So you have your big, like Notre Dame or St. Peter's, and all these other ones are the littler churches, the smaller churches of the smaller congregations that all attribute to the big one. Now, I've talked to you in the past about history repeats itself and people kind of are cyclical. Think about how, I just mentioned in Christianity, think about how the church is set up. right? You have smaller churches go to larger cathedrals, go to even Vatican City at the top, right? Humans copy humans. That's what we've done for at least what we think we've done for all of history. I'll qualify that. So then there's some interesting scientific geometric designs, and this is where I'm going to get to the wrap-up of, say, my science background. Get a couple more points here. The pillars are dead center of the circles, in some of these circles in Göbekli Tepe. And even though they're not there, some scientists and some people looking at it have connected lines, imaginary lines, between three of the pillars. You get a nearly equilateral triangle. Triangles, of course, being a very geometric shape that we've talked about multiple times with these historical cultures, Egypt particularly, right? That's where we get pyramids from. And to the people looking at this, this means advanced planning. Now, we're talking about, you know, Neanderthal time men and women or humans, which means they're not
supposed to be that smart,
as intelligent as we are now, but they're planning out sophisticated, complex floor plans and blueprints in order to design this triangular motion, this triangular geometric shape. Now, you can't confirm if they were, we can't confirm, at least with modern tools, if they were built, these circular areas, if they were built simultaneously or at different months, years over the course of their history, right? So we know that there's the big one, and each enclosure had a primary animal it was centered around. But I even made a note that you're going to make a joke here, so I'm going to let you have it. Location D.
Very hard location when you're married.
Is the biggest and has two pillars. And D is the main structure of Göbekli Tepe. So I'll let you have a joke about the D being the largest of the structures.
I can't come up with a good one at this point, but...
You can't get one up right now?
The D's nuts guy pops into my mind.
You can't get one up for D right now?
No, can't get the D up.
That's impressive.
Neither can the Jets.
Well, that's the only thing they do have is defense.
That's the only thing, the D.
All right, well, off the joke. Each of these enclosures does actually have a primary animal that they're kind of focused around, whether it be a leopard or a scorpion or a fox or a vulture. All of, again...
And I have no idea what animals are indigenous to Turkey.
I would say the vultures definitely, right? Because
But you're going back 11,000 years.
Well, vultures are going to, as you say, they're going to scavenge, right?
The vulture I could see. In my profession, I don't know what animals are indigenous to Turkey, especially at that time period. So, I don't know, were leopards indigenous
to... Well, at the time, it was supposed to be fertile grassland, so I would say leopards and foxes are probably indigenous.
Foxes, guaranteed, because there's foxes almost everywhere.
Right, and obviously scorpions, because, you know, when you think about insect... Well, Turkey's
desert is at area. At points, I know there's mountainous areas, but there's definitely,
scorpions are going to be a big thing in that kind of a zone. Right. So, that's just me. So that's most of the scientific. And I don't know if you want to jump in a little bit, and I'll get back to talking about some of the Graham Hancock stuff in a second.
Well, actually, when we get to the Graham Hancock stuff, that's when I'm going to start to tell you about why people are so against him, because you just mentioned that these people were doing mathematical feats that shouldn't have been possible, right? And when you and I were going to school, in a lot of the history books, especially when we're learning about dinosaurs, when you get to the next time period, you're starting to see the Ice Age, where you're seeing mammoths and saber-tooths, and then you start seeing what? The cavemen, right? And we were always taught in school that at that time when humans first started coming about, and this is obviously different than the Bible, right? Because the Bible claims that, you know, there was Adam and Eve, and then we went on to the biblical stories of, you know, Genesis and then on. that scientifically humans were coming about and they weren't smart. You know, cavemen, and then they advanced from there. But for the most part, they were hunter-gatherers. They hunted, they ate raw meat until they figured out fire. Once fire was established and they learned how to make fire, evolution started kicking in. Oh, we're eating meat that's cooked. Except Liver King, who has one eye now. But that's a different story.
Yep.
And, you know, eventually humans started advancing and then their intelligence started advancing. Now, you go back 11,000 years, and according to Nick's notes, this shouldn't have been possible, right? So now when we get into the Graham Hancock, one of his main synopsises or theories that come about is that, one, these are probably just as or more advanced than the Egyptian pyramids of Giza, and that there may have been advanced civilizations that we did not know about. And when he says this, I guess you could use this as a bridge into Graham Hancock. When he says this, he is crucified for saying these things. And his science and his theories, I don't know if you watched Ancient Apocalypse, but I watched, I think there was 6 episodes, and I think they were like 30, 40 minutes long or 20 minutes long. They were very good, very compelling. And when you present evidence and you're like, I could prove this and this is this, you're going to sell me. You know what I mean? You're going to sell me based on what you present. And people like, what's his name from the Egyptologist?
Oh my God, I know this is, you talk about him all the time, the one that won't debate. Graham Hancock. Hold on, I'll look it up.
I had just had his name in my head and it slipped me, but I'm really thinking about
it. This is the one that said he found Indiana Jones wishes he was here, right?
Yeah, and then the video cuts off of that video. But anyways, people like him, they don't like Graham Hancock. Neil deGrasse Tyson, they don't like Graham Hancock. And these are the people...
Zahi Hawass,
yes. Zahi Hawass, Neil deGrasse Tyson... They won't even touch Graham Hancock's theories, you know? And it's crazy to me. It's like, why won't two other important, intelligent individuals come to the table with all their notes and put them to the table and be like, all right, your notes, they make sense up to this part. Your notes make sense up to this part. And then just bring them together. Because then you guys might come up collaboratory of a totally different opinion and finds a new archaeological breakthrough that, hey, you were wrong. Instead, these people just say, you know what? You're ludicrous for saying this, and that. I'm actually surprised Netflix let Graham Hancock have that documentary
series. And that it's still there?
And that it's still there. Because Netflix, not to get into another subject, but for the most part is very out there with certain things. Now, yeah. Well, before I close on that and let you get into Graham Hancock and what you were going to say, there's been, in the last few years, and you could see it, where people that are professionals and have went to school and have the intelligence level to do their own research have been shut down from presenting their findings and their studies. Now, without going in depth and saying it, because I don't want to do, we took
a while. Not going to do a warning.
We took a while to do the monologue because we had to redo it, right, before we started recording. But in the last few years, if you're smart enough, you can catch on to what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. There was many people in the medical field that were presenting their
alternative theories.
Their theories, their research, right? Mm-hmm. And the news. And the doctors that are on the news were like, no, don't listen to these people. To the extent that they were actually shut off YouTube, shut off social media, would not allow them to have their theories. Now, a lot of their stuff that they did say has been sporadically coming out from the high-end media and the high-end doctors. But the high-end doctors and high-end media dumb it down to make it sound like, well, they're right to an extent so that they won't be wrong.
Right.
And that is the same thing that archaeologists, anthropologists, and scientists are doing with Graham Hancock when he's literally presenting valid ideas to not just Egypt, but to, in particular, Göbekli Tepe, which he mentions on the show Ancient Apocalypse on a few occasions, and even goes on Joe Rogan, which he was actually recently on Joe Rogan, and this conversation came up. Like, why is Zahi Awash, why doesn't he want to talk?
Right, he
won't. He actually, Graham Hancock, actually, he won't even talk to me. Right. You know? And they won't even touch Billy Carson either.
Right.
Even though Billy Carson is, the things he says is really out there. Like, he's smart. His story is crazy how he got to where he's at. But Graham Hancock is more intelligent and scientific. Billy Carson will just flat out say, yeah, the pyramids would conduct electricity, which we know that.
Right.
To an extent. But he was like, the Ark of the Covenant, there was more than one, and they were in the pyramids. And you're like,
right. And they were batteries.
Where's
the
batteries? Yeah. You know, so, but Graham Hancock, very, very intelligent individual, valid theories, presents evidence. People won't give him the time of day. And when he touches this subject, Göbekli Tepe, mm-hmm. and is talking about more advanced than the Pyramid Giza, probably advanced civilization that predates the Egyptians, maybe these people were part of the construction of the pyramids in Giza, but then Zahi Awash is like, no, the Egyptians did it, and this is how they did it. I even think Zahi Awash has a theory on how they were built, and it ain't advanced civilizations, and it ain't aliens.
No. So I guess there's three. I was going to say there's two. There's three reasons why people wouldn't debate. One, and this is an unfortunate truth about people that are fairly intelligent, they tend to, especially when they get to a high level of intelligence, they tend to think most people that are not exactly where they are at or haven't proven that they belong
not
there.
Not worth the time.
Not worth the time because they're arguing with idiots. That's the expression, right? Like you can't argue with anyone. Least of all an idiot because you're wasting your time.
Well, that's not necessarily true because have you seen some of the podcasts and shows that Neil deGrasse Tyson goes on?
Yeah.
He's even been on Joe Rogan.
But see, they get baited into certain things and they get told they have to do certain things because Joe Rogan is what? Joe Rogan's like one of the number one podcasts in the world. Like you can't avoid him.
But you know the type of questions you're going to get asked.
Correct.
And Joe Rogan and Neil deGrasse Tyson, that episode, as much as I don't like Neil, that episode is intriguing because Joe Rogan's pressuring him, like, how could you say this? And he kind of just gives the same answer and doesn't, you know what? You know what
right, I mean? He's got to go because he's got, you know, he's...
Doesn't have to go.
You're right, he doesn't, but...
He can be invited and
if
say
he's,
no.
If he's taking certain funding and they're telling him, like, yeah, if you're going to take my funding, you need to go there and spout about it, then you need to go there and spout about it. But then he goes and he gives the same dull answer, right? So that's one, right? You don't want to argue with idiots. That's the one perspective. The second one is they know something and they don't want other people to know. And what they know is very equivalent to what's being said, but they can't let it be public. Now, that would be like a conspiracy-like theory.
That's like a theory that Joey was saying. Unfortunately, Joey's not here to say it again, but he really thinks that certain people are in the know, and they're put in that place to try to combat the people that are trying to, you know, they're trying to break the modern answer.
Right.
Like,
this is
the pyramids were not built by Egyptians.
That's why Joey talks about Zahi Awash all the time, and he talks about that one video,
like
and then it just disappeared.
Zahi Awash is bought.
Right.
By whom? We don't know. But he's bought, and he thinks as well that Neil deGrasse Tyson is bought because there's a multitude of evidence. Even though there's a lot of people and conspiracy theorists that say all the government's just using aliens as a smokescreen, but there's too much evidence out there to say, yeah, they're doing that now, but there's more to it than that. There is something else out there. You know what I mean? And he believes that they're being bought by a company or an organization to keep people like Graham Hancock and Joe Rogan at bay.
Right. And yeah, I mean, in a third point to that, right, with the other 2 points, that was the second point, but, you know, that we just kind of delved into. But the third point is now we have, and I'm not going to go too far in because I really don't want to have to record anything else, but now we have other means than mainstream media to get information out there. And it's very easy to shut the lever off on what is out and what is not out on the non, it's easy to do on mainstream
media. I got to throw this in real quick, not cutting you off. Recently, Elon Musk was on Joe Rogan. And I'm not going to get into politics because I, quite frankly, don't care. And I have a personal page that I'll go on, I'll check, and I'll see something, and I'll repost it because, you know, it's valid and whatever. And that's the extent of my personal page and my politic life. However, Elon Musk was recently on Joe Rogan's podcast saying that when he bought Twitter and saw archives, data files, workers that worked there, it was literally a means of the government to put forth exactly what they want to be out there on Twitter.
We learned about this in school.
And that's crazy because that means that I never really went on Twitter during the Jack Dorsey days.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really, even with Musk taking it over, I'm not even on it now that much. And we have a swap page on there. And I don't really, I just don't like Twitter. I don't use it. I'll go on there once in a blue and throw an episode, whatever, that we just did. But people at the time when Twitter was big were going there for news. You type, you go with the magnifying glass, you type search, you can see what's trending. So if you typed in, anything in news or political, it'd come up. But if you did that and you liked Twitter, guess what? If you typed in, you know, Biden, what? Trump, Bush, Barack.
That was going to show up on everything else you were
it's
on.
It's going to show what the government was telling Dorsey to allow.
Right. We've talked
about
this.
Which is scary because that means they could have hid a lot of stuff. There was big bombshell news reports that were posted by reputable news outlets that were taken down at a certain time of the, you know what I mean?
I think people understand what you're talking about.
Yes. So that's scary.
Well, I mean, we were taught this in school. So for our younger listeners and people, maybe even the older listeners, we were taught propaganda's been around forever. Okay. There was no internet forever. So propaganda was newspapers, propaganda was flyers, propaganda was pamphlets. It was all paper goods or oral before paper, right? Where people would just go town criers or they would hire people to go in and make noise. That's the same thing now, except now it's digital. So now we have these sites like Twitter and the Meta umbrella, all those things that we're, and the ABC, which is Google and YouTube and stuff like that, where all the stuff can be distributed or cannot be distributed based on the whims of, because it's got no oversight, based on the whims of the owners. Now, if the owners are in the pocket of anyone, that's on them. If the owners are choosing, like Elon Musk, to release everything, also on them. Not to get into anybody's side, but it's at that point, these are private organizations, and they can do as they will as long as they don't have anyone dug into them or have money beyond money, which is what Musk has, so he can do whatever the hell he wants.
But scary thing is when Musk took over Twitter, it only took about 5 to 6 months for lawsuits to happen against him for crazy reasons.
Right.
Because he was releasing too much stuff that originally was not intended to be shown.
Correct.
And why are people may be asking, well, I'm just tuning in, I fast forward to this part, or whatever the case may be, why is he talking about it? Why is because there are people in the world of archaeology, like Zahi Awash, Neil deGrasse Tyson, and other individuals that are literally trying to hide people that have valid science evidence or archaeological evidence, like Graham Hancock, so that their dead set history cannot be changed. And why can't it be changed? Now, there's been history that's been changed before, and that's okay. Hence, for instance, because I did a reel recently on Catholicism and Christianity, right? History changed on the profession of Jesus Christ, right? You know about this one, right?
Wasn't a carpenter.
He wasn't a carpenter. In Jerusalem, Bethlehem, all the areas that he was with his family.
More than likely, he was a mason.
He was a stonemason. And I actually was on WFAN for this this conversation because there was a they were talking about on WFAN, why does certain names pop up in carpenters? And I got through to Boomer and Geo. How? I don't know, but I did. Matter of fact, I'm looking through it as I'm saying this. But I got through to Boomer and Geo because Harrison Ford was on there. We all know Harrison Ford was a carpenter.
Correct.
Then there was a baseball player, obviously. His last name was Carpenter, so he was on the list just because of his last name. But Jesus was on there. So they asked me, like, why is Jesus, you know, why are you saying that Jesus is not a carpenter? Because I told Al Dukes before he put me through on the phone that Jesus wasn't a carpenter. So I guess that intrigued them to take my call. And I said, Jesus at the time grew up and resided in an area where horticulture life was really not, it wasn't out there like that.
That's plant life,
there
folks.
There was no horticulture or trees. There wasn't enough of that for them to be able to do carpentry like that. And if you watch a lot of the old cartoons or Charlton Heston movies, a lot of the houses were built by stone. Like you could see, like the houses were stone. They weren't wood houses. So it wasn't plausible for Jesus to be a carpenter. So long story short, Jesus's history of his profession was changed. Actually, here's the video. I'll see if I can play it, if it goes through. This was when I was on WFAN. If it loads, when it loads, I'll play it. But
all right. So while that's hopefully that loads up, when Billy says archaeologist, it's not just archaeology. It's basically any field where people have been around for a while and are experts in the field. Why don't they let others jump in with alternative theories? And we just covered a couple of points as to why it may be they don't agree with them because they think that they're smarter and don't want to waste their time, or because they're bought, or because they're propagandists in general. Maybe they're not experts but are fed the information and then have to kind of sell the information from a certain perspective. So that's what we're talking about, why we kind of got a little off track, but it's not really off track because my next set of notes, which is...
It just cut off.
Technical malfunction.
It only played half the video.
All right, well, let's see. Hopefully he gets that video going. If not, when we talk about science that isn't technically accepted or science that isn't...
Jesus, they said that when the area he lived in, there wasn't a lot of wood.
Yeah, he's more of a stonemason.
I just wanted to get you guys
to, quick. He's like a stonemason, yeah. Yeah, so so we got to take him off that list, Billy, and now we got to put him on the famous masons?
I think we always think of him as a carpenter.
Everybody thinks of him as a carpenter.
So we have to leave him there, even if it's inaccurate.
Right, exactly. You have to leave him there.
Yeah, so I got through at WFAN. That was a few years back about when they changed and solidified that, yeah, Jesus wasn't a carpenter. So the point to that, why I mentioned that, and played the clip because I thought it was cool talking to Gio and Boomer Esiason, old school quarterback for the New York Jets.
He was a quarterback for the New York Jets. I was waiting for you to mention that.
Yeah, come on. I know my sports too, man. I'm not all like retarded ghost stuff. People look at me like, this kid's weird. Oh, I know my sports too. But
well, you could be weird.
They changed the history of Jesus being a carpenter. And not only that, go back to Egypt. What was the running theory about the pyramids for a long time? They were built by who?
Are we talking about the not slaves, because they wouldn't trust slaves to build stuff like
right,
that?
Right, but for a long time, the theory was that they were built by slaves. Right. Which, by the way,
were the Jewish people.
Right, because the story of Moses freeing the Jewish people from the Egypt. Egyptians.
Right.
So the theory was that the pyramids were built by the Jewish slaves. And then it turns out that in the early 2000s, I believe it was mid-2000s, don't quote me on that, the theory changed that the people that built the pyramids were actually laborers who were
skilled,
and they were treated top notch. They were housed, they were fed, they were clothed, they had days off.
Correct. You wouldn't give that to slaves.
No, absolutely not. But again, point of the whole concept I'm trying to make here is history has changed and it has been allowed. When Graham Hancock makes his valid scientific points, some people are making it their point to defend and say that he's full of shit.
Well, let's not call, I don't want to call it valid only because I don't want to take a stand one way or another. We'll call it sound. Sound meaning that there's backing to the concept that it could be.
It's not valid. You're right. It's not 100% concrete, but neither is the construction of the pyramids.
No.
Because they still can't. Mike might said the chubby bald history geek, known now on Twitter, TikTok. But he may say, no, this is how it was done, even though Joey and I had him come on, and they actually got along, like very...
I was impressed
very
by that.
Civilized...
I really thought there was going to be a fist fight during that
very
episode.
Civilized debate between Joey and Mike. But Mike stands his ground that it was built by ramps and pulleys. No, it's physically impossible. There's things, there's excavators and skid steers and things today that cannot do and move those stones. There's literally videos.
I'm pretty sure they did a clip of like showing
and
them
the,
trying
the
to lift one stone,
was
just one stone,
literally tipping
up in
over.
The air.
Yes,
the excavator was up in the air.
And I'm at my job. Not to get off topic. At my job, there are machines.
Well, we get off topic. That's okay.
No, but it's not really. But it's at my job. There's heavy machinery that we use to lift certain things, right? A couple weeks back, one of our vehicles that was made to lift pallets and things, and it wasn't a forklift, it was a little bit bigger, it died on us, completely done. Starter's done, battery's done, whatever. So they brought another machine that was newer and a little bit stronger to try to lift the machine and drag it over to the side so that we can get it out because it's done, it's kaput. When that machine came to try to lift it and you know, push it to the side so it wasn't in the way, the newer, heavier, brand new machine was lifting off the ground, trying to get our old machine out of the way. Now, this machine that we had that broke down, probably, I don't know, over 1,000 pounds, 1,500, 1,800, I don't know. I'm guesstimating. We're talking about stones that are 10 to 20 tons. So, what? You know what I mean? Like, so anyways, even though it's not a valid, right, you're correct for free, making me rephrase, Graham Hancock has valid, he has very reputable or good ideas
correct.
On his theories.
Mm-hmm.
But again, people like Zahi Hawash, they're not concrete, valid theories. They're...
Well, no, nothing is 100% certainty, although people would try and sell you that it is. Nothing is, because science in general, the concept of science is you're not going out to prove a theory. Your whole job as a scientist is to disprove over and over and over and leave nothing else. So it is constantly revisiting hypothesis, constantly revisiting experimentation, constantly, even history, because these are scientists. These are historical scientists, but they're scientists. They are going back and revisiting over and over to try and find the truth, which means they have to eliminate more and more options as we progress further and further in time. We talked about it last time where dinosaurs were not a thing. Dinosaurs were not proven when our parents went to school. They were by the time we got there.
Right. But then what else happened with dinosaurs? Right, they had skin. They were reptilian. Now we're starting to find out.
Feathers.
They had feathers. Like, you know what I mean? Like, things
closest
are
closest relative to a dinosaur now is a chicken.
Chicken, right?
That is not something.
A rooster, a chicken, a hen, or a cock. If you want to be a dick about it.
Well,
here
see you
what
go.
I did there?
I did see what you did there. You finally got your D joke in there. Okay. So speaking of,
I'm gonna clip that and use that one.
Speaking
the
of
disappointment on your face again.
No, it was actually a good one. I was impressed. But I wanted to throw in my good segue there. Speaking of roosters, let's get to Graham Hancock. Okay, so now Graham Hancock. Yeah, thank you. I have a pun. Okay, so Andrew Collins wrote a book called Göbekli Tepe, Genesis of the Gods. The foreword of the book was written by Graham Hancock. Now, he has, again, we kind of went over it. He's much into the ancient civilizations and alternative histories and ways of viewing things. So Andrew Collins comes up with, is this site or is the site one where certain prehistory advanced cultures were still coping with PTSD-like symptoms of the comet impact? Because there was the comet that impacted around 13,000 years ago. That is said to have impacted in North America, or not North America, but the world around 13,000 BC. And Göbekli Tepe was built roughly 900 years later. Okay, so now Andrew Collins is positing maybe these are people who are still kind of like weary of something coming back from the sky. And the reason he goes there is I'll get into that in a second, but there's a reason for it. So he talks about these human Neanderthal hybrids, which they're hybrids because Neanderthal are a different type of creature than a generalized Homo sapien, which is a human. And they were these hybrids that kind of built things. So before we get to them...
That's his theory?
We're getting to that. Okay. That's part of it. What he does talk about, and these I had to look these up because I never heard of these people before, Swiderians. Okay, Swiderians are real people. That they were they thrived around 10,900 BC, which is roughly 12,900 BC, right after this comet hit, leading up to Göbekli Tepe, right? These are real people based, they were miners, and I don't mean little children, I mean miners like dug in the ground kind of people, from Poland, and I had to write this out phonetically because this is tough because it's in Cyrillic, I think, or it's in Polish at least, which is hard for me to read, but Swieto Kris Iski Mountains or Holy Cross Mountains. They were very active there and in Central and Eastern Europe around 10,900 BC, again, the time of the impact of this comet, of this celestial thing. They play a central role.
How'd they survive? Are they on the side of the world or something?
I guess because they're miners, like if you think that then maybe they dug enough or deep enough and they were able to dig, you know, tunnels or, and cave systems into the kind of ground.
Impact hit the earth and they were underground. I think that's the last place you'd want to be.
Well, I mean, depends on where it hits, right? If think about how do we build bunkers? We don't build them above ground.
Right. I mean, just.
So again, these are proven. This is the general scientific community believes that these were around.
Okay.
They play a central role in the transition from the Paleolithic era, which is ended around 10,000 BC, to the Mesolithic era, which is between 10,000 and 8,000 BC. They had sophisticated cosmology, which is the study of the stars, right? They believed in a cosmic tree that supported the sky world. This is why, you know, Collins is kind of positing that maybe these people went to where Göbekli Tepe is and kind of built it because... What if you're a people that's really not advanced enough to understand that there is space and space has other things and comets coming down is not a god, but it's space? Well, you're going to see a sky world and you're going to see if the sky is crashing down to Earth, that's the end of existence, right? And what would be the sky crashing down to Earth? Well, a hell of a size of a comet would be what we would think of as the sky crashing down to Earth, right? So... they had this sophisticated cosmology. They believed in a cosmic tree, almost like the Norse people, right? And their shamans, the Swiderians, they could enter the world by becoming birds. That was the only way to get into this sky world, to become a bird, right? In some parts of the world, it was a swan. Other parts, it eventually became a vulture. I remember when we talked about Göbekli Tepe before, one of the animals carved into the walls and the pillars was a vulture. Okay. Even the humans that they kind of carve have these claw-like features and these longer faces, which would give you a beak and claws, right? So there's these shaman transforming kind of beings.
I know people that are listening, they're going crazy right now. Nephilim, I told you.
Oh, wait, I'm going to get there. It's in there. It's in these notes. But these shamans, they would transform into these birds and go into the sky world because they would fight the trickster, right? Mm. Then we all know Loki the trickster, Norse mythology. That's the most famous trickster that we know of. The trickster would become a fox, which is actually in some Native American cultures. The trickster fox is a very big thing. And you know when I first learned about that? Gargoyles, the cartoon.
Which is coming back.
This is what I heard, but it's a live action, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
So there's a fox. In Native American mythology, fox was a trickster. Okay, so again, what was carved into some of the walls?
Fox.
Vultures, fox. Okay. The shamans were transformed to stop the fox from going back into the sky world and destroying the cosmic tree, which would bring the earth back, the sky onto the earth. Again, comet to earth. We can make that connection now. Just the same way that Norse people had the gods were of lightning and the god of vegetation and the god of this and the Romans and the Greeks, and I said Romans, that's twice now, all these people had these various ways to explain what now scientifically we can explain through processes we didn't understand back then, or at least we are alleged to not understand. Okay. So now here we go. We've got some, maybe some reasons for the vultures, some reasons for the fox. You also, which I did not know this, there are C's and H's carved into the wall of Göbekli Tepe. Now, the H would stand for transition to the sky world or heaven, right? H for heavens. The C was most likely, according to Collins, again, this is all according to Collins, and this is considered pseudoscience because it can't be proven or by accepted scientists. The C stands for crescent moon shapes, to go from lunar cycle to lunar cycle. Again, kind of attributing to this cosmology of these people. Now, the last of Göbekli Tepe is covered up around 8,000 BC, which also coincides, this is why I'm going back to the Swiderians, coincides with the end of the Mesolithic era, which is 8,000 BC, and we're moving into the Neolithic era at that point, and Neolithic is more about domestication of plants and animals versus this hunter-gatherer, sky people versus earth people kind of mentality. So, you know, that's when Göbekli Tepe kind of just gets buried over, and people are like, well, why did it happen? And the best reckoning I can have is because it's you're switching eras and you're switching how people view the world and attack the world. Okay? We will get into there's more I want to get into about the serpent-headed people, the Anunnaki, and the Watchers of the Book of Enoch.
We'll do that right after this momentary pause. And we're back. Nick, tell me about these Nephilim, because I know it's coming.
Yes, it is. We're very close to getting to them. So let me build up to it. So I mentioned these human Neanderthal hybrids, which we can go and, you know, I know you've talked about the Anunnaki before, but so these human Neanderthal hybrids, they had these kind of elongated faces and these longer necks. Okay, because that's just where they're coming from. So they're almost like serpent-headed, and they had these serpent-headed gods. And so there were some people that took over the region around 6,000 BC. So, you know, this is 2,000 years after Göbekli Tepe has been kind of covered up. But the region, and what I failed to mention before, and I apologize, is there's a lot of obsidian in this region. Like, this is why this region is very big, because there's a lot of black glass there.
Were you on the episode where we talked about obsidian? Or was that Joey?
I think I was. I know we've mentioned it a couple times in discussion. I don't know if I was on the exact episode. I can't.
So obsidian is, it's inside of a rock that's gray, usually near mountainous terrain. And if you break the rock open, it's a blackness inside. It's very glass-like, but it's also very sharp and can be used once you break the rock open. If you chip at it at certain angles, you can make weaponry. Pointed weaponry, or, you know, make tools. Donnie Dust, very famous wilderness survival person who I did speak to recently, actually. And he told me some intriguing things. I was working on getting him on an episode, but, he just gave me a whole bunch of story stuff. But Donnie Dust, you see a lot of his videos, and he makes, these obsidian spears and obsidian like axes. And, that's what obsidian is. You can Google it. Very, very black. Inside of a gray rock, very black, glass-like, very hard to describe, but it could be used for weaponry.
Yeah, it's very, and at that point where these, where Göbekli Tepe is built, is where the I think it's Bangol, B-A-N-G-O-L, I think is what it's spelled, Bangol Mountain Range. That's where there's a big abundance of this, and so the people that take over at the time are in control of the area, and you have to go through them, which is why... That's another theory of why it was built in that area, because now you're kind of protecting it. It's almost like you're building a fort around. It's almost like the gold rushes in San Francisco, right? So you're building and protecting. You're building around something, a castle with a moat around it to protect, right? So anyway, these people that took over at that point, they purposely deformed their own heads. And elongate them a little bit further to kind of fulfill this imagery of this serpent-headed people.
Which we still see to this day.
Yes, you do. You know, the snake man, right, who cut the men and women who cut the tongue. You know, they get the piercings in the nose.
There's tribes in Africa and islands that try to do it to their neck. People wear the rings to their feet.
They wear those rings that elongate their necks. Now, when I talk about the tongue, that's not just relegated to anywhere in the world. I mean, you see a lot of that in modern, especially tattoo society. A lot of people will do that with their tongue. You have these serpent-headed people. And they do that to kind of make themselves look more like the gods, their ancestors. They're playing into it. Now, these are smarter, obviously. These are smarter than the average bear.
Also, you see elongated heads in Egypt.
Yes.
King Akhenaten.
I thought you were going to go to Xerxes. Nefertiti,
I believe. And was it Nefertiti? King Tut's
I don't know. I feel like Xerxes.
King Tut. Akhenaten and Tut's wife and Tut's mom, which I think was Nefertiti.
That might be correct.
I'm not sure.
I'm not a super.
That would have been Joey's forte, but they were said to have elongated heads under there, you know, when they did the whole.
Now we can go and we can attribute that to because there was a lot of inbreeding. We can talk about that, but that's not what I mean here. I mean, like, these people had already kind of like longer heads and longer necks, but they did more.
Deformed it.
Right, they wanted to look more like these serpent gods and ancestors of their. This is oral tradition at this point. We really don't have a lot of written tradition at this point, so it's more oral. But we do have this. These people are like playing up. They're smart enough that they know to play up to this. Especially they're in control of the obsidian, which is big, you know, important thing. Again, we could talk about all the kinds of reasons why things have value, why gold has value. Now there's some scientific backing to it, but you want to know why gold really had value back in the day? Because it was shiny. Why obsidian would have value? You can make weapons out of it, but it's also shiny. Ooh, pretty thing, right? If we attribute ourselves or ascribe to the theory of evolution where we came from apes, well, animals are fascinated by shiny things. Forever. You know, you can go look up any kind of amount of history where animals will steal shiny items. Like that. Okay.
She's going to spill your energy drink.
It's gone. So okay. She's got no shot at that. So the serpent-headed people. Then we talk about the Anunnaki. I know you're big on the Anunnaki. I don't know a lot about the Anunnaki.
I'm not too big on it, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, they're said to also be serpent-headed gods. The Anunnaki are serpent-headed gods who gave grain and sheep to people, gave the first grain and sheep. So now we can, there's other stories. If you know your mythologies, especially Greek, Prometheus gave fire to man, and Prometheus was then punished by the rest of the gods for all eternity, had his liver eaten by, not sure if it was a vulture or an eagle, but it was definitely a bird, eating out his liver, pecking his liver out every night, every day. The liver would grow back overnight, and then he's chained to a rock, and it would be eaten again the next day by Zeus, the head of the gods, did not like that he gave it to humans. So, you know, again, here's a very similar story. The Anunnaki allegedly gave sheep and grain to the people. And if we're talking about the Anunnaki giving this, domestication occurred right around the Neolithic era, which is when the disappearance of Göbekli Tepe and the hunter-gatherers kind of start to go by the wayside, right? And then we have the Watchers, and here's where it comes in, the Northern Mesopotamian. This is around the area of the Israelites of the Canaan times, okay? Human angels are these watchers of the Book of Enoch. Tall, feathered, look like vipers. So this could almost, maybe this is almost a dinosaur, but this is also sounds a lot like the Anunnaki and a lot like these serpent-headed people. Tall, feathered, because feathers can look like scales from a distance. And they're even connected to, which I found interesting, the serpent in the Garden of Eden. Again, here we go. Same area, Garden of Eden. And we talked about this as potentially my thinking, and I think their thinking is to make this the Garden of Eden. There's actually four rivers that come into that area as well. And I look up all of them, but I know that like the Euphrates and the Tigris are in that same area. And there's supposed to be two other rivers. And I cannot remember them, so I apologize. But four rivers, that's kind of where the holy rivers are, which is why it, again, is ascribed to the Garden of Eden. And these watchers of the Book of Enoch, allegedly, if they are real, 200 of them lay with humans, especially women, and produced giants who go by the name Nephilim. Nephilim.
And if you are a fan of the Book of Enoch,
which I have read, You can find it if you search online.
Yeah, you can find it. It's not really adapted in the Catholic and Christianity faith.
No, it talks more about like the first wife of Adam.
But it's in there. It says that these Nephilim were created. The angels were sent to look after the humans. But they not only crossbreeded with humans and created the Nephilim, right? Mm-hmm. They were told by God not to give humans, like Prometheus. Prometheus gave secrets. Fire. Any of the secrets that he said, do not give them. What they know is what they know. You do not give them anything else they don't need to know, like advanced certain things. They did. And they bred with them. And they created these Nephilim who were hideous. They were not, they didn't look, they were bigger. They had, you know, horrific features. Mm-hmm. They didn't look like humans. They were a cross between angels and humans and became monstrous, which is alluding to what you're describing here.
Right. So we take that two paths, right? You want to go, they're legitimate angels, and I'm glad you bring that up, because if you've ever watched any of your TikToks, if anybody's ever watched any of your TikToks or your posts, that angel that looks like all eyes, angels, if you read the Bible, and
seraphim.
They are not supposed to be these angelic looking beings that we see in cartoons, like cherubs, like Cupid.
Except the archangels, apparently.
Right. But being tall and feathered, that kind of gives you that angel perspective, right? But then looking like the snakes and being these huge items or these huge creatures that are kind of disproportionate, that can be the angelic side. Especially you talk about it's connected to the serpent in the Garden of Eden. And if we really delve into anybody who does know it, it's supposed to be Lucifer, who was himself an angel. Okay, so here we go. This could be a connection there. The other way to look at it scientifically is, I just mentioned inbreeding. If you're hybrid, right, so you're a Neanderthal and a human, just if you can just think of it as the easiest analogy is to just take any two animals that are not the same species and think about if they bred, okay? It's going to create some horrific-looking designs. It's not always going to be something...
Except for a tiger and a lion.
Right, you can get the liger...
The liger actually looks legit. Like it could
but be. Then they can't breed. Is that correct?
I don't know the details of that. I know tigers and lions can breathe. I don't think the liger can breathe because it's just a completely genetic
Right, difference. And then there's something with like the
because
donkey.
What if a liger mated with a tiger? What are you going to make? You know, like
right. And then I think there's some kind of breed of donkey, like when you breed it a certain way that it cannot, it doesn't have reproductive organs or something like that.
That I don't know. Never heard that. I know there's different... Dude, donkeys... They're very close to a lot of things. Horses, mules. Matter of fact, a mule, I think, is a donkey.
Right. And I think that's what it is. I think a mule cannot breed. I think a mule is like a hybrid, but cannot breed further.
Do you know a zebra sounds like a donkey?
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
I did not know.
Blew my mind the first time
I thought zebra sounded like Chris Rock.
No. Zebra, I said the movie, but the cartoon, right?
Madagascar, yeah.
Yeah, Madagascar. The zebras sound like donkeys, which is like mind-blowing, because... If you look at it, it looks horse-like, but if you really look at a zebra,
right.
It's
looks, I would think it would be closer to a giraffe.
No, not because of it. No.
No?
The closest thing to a giraffe is, what is that animal called? See, I always do that.
Sorry. Getting off topic a little
bit.
Yeah. Anyways.
Okapi.
Okapi?
Okapi.
Okay.
The closest to a giraffe.
Don't know what that is. You'll have to explain that to me later.
It has the ass of a zebra, believe it or not. It looks like a... The tail end of it, no, I mean this realistically, the tail end of an okapi looks like a zebra. Okay. It has the zebra stripe, but it's the closest thing to a giraffe.
Okay. Cool. That's new information. So while we're on Göbekli Tepe.
That's an okapi. Just
say, oh, yeah, it does. It does. It looks like
that's the closest thing to a giraffe.
Right. Definitely looks like a hybrid between the two. So the fact that there's hybrids here, right, that could be the reason why, by the way, we'll get back to this, why there's deformities, why they Nephilim look so big and so deformed. Look, you're going to get good traits. You're going to get bad traits, especially like this is why when you talk about inbreeding throughout history, you have a lot of bad features. They don't live very long, but they're stronger in one aspect versus another. That could explain why they might have been able to move these giant pillars.
I watched the documentary. This dude went to... some southern state and found his way to a family completely inbred. Disgusting. You know what I mean? Like, we're not talking about sixth cousin or stepbrother. We're talking about direct family inbreeding. And the only one in that family that was somewhat there in the head was the grandmother or mother that was talking. There was a guy there, he couldn't even talk. He bleh, 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 speak like Tasmanian tiger. But like you asked him, he kind of was coherent to what was being said, but he couldn't
represent.
Their eyes looked like they were blind. They were all, you know, cross-eyed, kooky-eyed. Crazy stuff, man. Like, crazy stuff.
But I'll bet there was something there, whether they were fast or strong. There's some trait that is going to come across.
The dude that couldn't speak properly, there's no, just the way he looked, no doubt in my mind that if he got up and got mad,
smash through a wall.
Yeah. Like,
so again, you know, we never saw Nephilim. I know you've talked about it where they've talked about the bones they may have found or the.
Just throwing it out there. We've never seen a Nephilim, but my friend who brings them up all the time, and I haven't really been mentioning him a lot on the podcast.
Talk about Charlie?
Yes. We've never seen a Nephilim, but he swears they were existed. But then he's like, I've never seen a UFO, so they don't exist. I'm like, dude.
It's one or the other. We have to be consistent. If we're going to be wrong, we're going to be consistently wrong. We're going to be right, we're going to be consistently
every haircut,
right.
Same conversations.
Right.
So, and I'm like, dude.
So yeah, I mean, that's where the Nephilim could be, scientifically speaking. If we talk about inbreeding and hybridization, you're going to get some good traits, but then you're going to get some really funky stuff, which would be the height, which would be the deformities and stuff
like
that.
So this is the interesting thing about talking about ancient civilization and Bible stuff is that all the stories are found somewhere, whether you believe the Bible or science or history. Like this right now, Göbekli Tepe and all this stuff we're talking about has correlation to stories that are biblical, which aren't, they're not really, what's the word? Observed.
Right.
But the book is out there.
Correct. So that's the thing, right? You know, human history was not always written. And so a lot of it was translated. And I don't care how well you hear a story. I literally could have a conversation with someone, 5 minutes later, go write it down, and it's going to be a little bit different. Not intentionally.
The game of telephone.
Right. It's not intentional.
Which I believe the Bible is the biggest game of telephone.
Correct.
Ever.
I mean, you're talking about the Bible was written, even the Old Testament was written 6,000 years after Göbekli Tepe. It's got to have some kind of basis. Now, and I'll say it again, and I'll say it until the day I die. The Norse did it. The Romans did it. The Greeks did it. Why are they all explaining away scientific things with gods, and we're the only people that say, oh, well, obviously this. Every people has said that. We're explaining away what we didn't understand with it being. I'm not saying that there's not a God. I think that there's a higher power, because for whatever reason, however you want to put it together, life had to come and evolve and grow. And it's not just doing it on its own. I mean, you could attribute that all the way back to singularity that popped and we get the Big Bang Theory. But the Big Bang Theory is actually put out by Christian scientists.
The Neil deGrasse people, him himself, he'll tell you Big Bang Theory. That's how everything was created. Molecules, atoms, and cells came together and started creating life. And okay, cool. And then Earth was formed, then Jupiter, Saturn.
I'm sure we could do it. We could go backwards. I'm sure we could.
But then you go to him and you're like, what was before that? Nothingness? What created the nothingness? What, you know what I'm saying? So
what,
like,
you, what you would could, make something come from nothing?
It literally hurts my brain because at night I think about...
It's existential. It's very existential.
I really think about crazy shit, which I shouldn't be thinking of. It's just the course of life in the last few years, not to sound morbid, with people passing away and certain things. You start thinking about things at night, right?
And we're getting older. So when you get older, you start to think. I literally just had this thought at my kitchen sink the other day. Like, it's weird to think that where I am in my age, I'm like, all right, well, I'm roughly halfway through my lifespan. Like, what am I leaving behind? And I know I have children I'm leaving behind, my legacy that way and whatnot. But I'm like, I'm thinking way so far in advance. But then when you think about it, it's not, because it's lived half that time
not
already.
Not for nothing, but you could be 10 years old and you're not guaranteed tomorrow. You could be one. You could be 3 months. It's scary. And you think about what you're leaving behind. I think about what happens, which is leading to me to, I think at some point in December, we got to touch that subject. Death and NDEs and kind of do like a part two, but not. Mm-hmm. But it's scary. You know what I mean? But not to get off topic, it's just you think about all this stuff, Neil deGrasse Tyson, you think he said Big Bang Theory. Okay. But what was before that? So there had to be something more, or, you know, and then you go down the rabbit hole, like, well, who created God? How is God here? You know what I mean? It's so crazy to think about this stuff.
Amara.
And the only thing that, you know, it's supposed to be his sister, right?
Hello. Well,
yeah.
From that show.
Yeah, anyway. From that show. But the, it's just like everything, if you really look at it, even though there's a lot of crazy things that shouldn't happen, you know, kids' cancer and people getting sick randomly and things like that, you really have to think about just like when I'm at work, I'm at a place where there's nature surrounding me. And you just look at around, and I go on these trails at Orchard Beach, and you look out in the ocean. I took my daughter to this park the other day, and it was like, it was a very cloudy day, but it was fairly warm. It wasn't, you know, warm, but it was good enough to be outside. And I'm looking out, seeing this view, and I'm just like, this is more than just a Big Bang Theory.
Intelligent design.
It's yeah. Everything on this earth was put here for a reason. There, you know, they say certain.
Don't think that's small.
Don't eat certain plants or eat like, everything we need has been put here. That's not Big Bang Theory.
That right. And why is it that we here have what we need and get
every other planet doesn't?
Don't sound egotistical here, but there's definitely life out there, and you people can argue with me up and down that there aren't aliens. And I don't mean that they're around the corner, but it would be egotistical to think in the entirety of the universe we're the only sentient beings that evolved.
Oh, I always say that too. It's also scary.
Right. I wouldn't want to be
like
the only
we're the only people floating on a space rock in the infinite universe.
So, you know, but there it may be nitrogen versus oxygen. It may be carbon versus oxygen. Why is it there that that happens? And yeah, you can, I guarantee you they can go into every scientific reason as to why. But how could it be so perfect in every single location? Are you going to say survival of the fittest is your only answer? Well, then what created the law of physics that makes survival of the fittest a real thing? Some design there. And if there's design, someone created it. So I think that there's a higher being. We got real off topic with that, but not so much. Because I do think that there's a higher being.
Right.
But all these explanations, which is where we came to this from, are ways of explaining things we just don't yet understand. And we may never understand certain things, and that's okay. It's scary, but it's okay. You know, the whole point of life is to keep exploring and keep looking. Speaking of exploring and looking, you know, we talk about a lot in this episode of Göbekli Tepe. You know, that's the most famous one. But they just recently, as of 2019, found a sister site called Karahan Tepe. Now, we talked off air, and you never heard of that.
No.
I don't know if Joey's ever heard of this one. Karahan Tepe was found in 2019. It's the sister site of Göbekli Tepe. It was found in the southeast province of Sanliurfa in Turkey. Okay? And they have more than 250 T-shaped megaliths, not as big as, obviously, Göbekli Tepe, with animal depictions and 3D human sculptures. And they found a big building with a diameter of 75 feet. Now, they found, when they dated this, to be the Neolithic period, which would be closer to society. And we started this where society was formed and then big structures versus Göbekli Tepe, which kind of did it the other way, big structure, then society formed around it. Well, in this one, in Karahan Tepe, they did find a building's a diameter of 75 feet, which is a long building. And, you know, that is probably more along the lines of what we kind of viewed history as, like a group came together and then built something to house themselves. And what I find really interesting, and then this is it, this is the end of Nick's notes at this point. It started in the Paleolithic era. That's when Göbekli Tepe was built. At the end of the Mesolithic era, that's when Göbekli Tepe was buried. And Neolithic era, or Neolithic period, is when allegedly Karahan Tepe is built. These are all the three major points of the Stone Age, right? We talked about cavemen. You mentioned cavemen and Neanderthals. Well, this is the transition from that caveman or that Neanderthal to more of the Homo sapien, which is what we are now. So we've moved away from this completely fight or flight, hunter-gatherer, and now we've gone all the way to the end of it, which is where we're more an agriculturally based and more of a society and culturally based and domesticated kind of people.
What I want to end with is that, and Joey and I have said this prior to the Nick's Note days, is that if people like Neil deGrasse Tyson and... Damn, I forgot it again.
Hawash.
Zahi Hawash. I don't know why I forget that. Zahi Hawash, Neil deGrasse Tyson. If they can just get past their egos or push the money that's being handed to them aside, because that's our theory, and come to the table, that would be one of the best conversations we'd ever witness, or what would come out of the conversation right. would be great.
We would gain so much as people just having that debate.
Having
a legitimate debate, not a, no, you're stupid, and that's the end of my conversation.
If they can be civil and get on a podcast like Joe Rogan, and you have Graham Hancock, Zahi Hawash, or deGrasse Tyson on the table and just talk. Hancock and Rogan, deGrasse and Hawash, that would be something else. Because there would be so, you know, and maybe one of them would surprise the other. Maybe something Zahi Hawash would say would surprise Graham Hancock, or something Joe Rogan says would surprise Zahi Hawash or Neil deGrasse Tyson. And then you can build off that and be like, you know what? We were right here, but at this point here, we're wrong, and we have to reevaluate what we think we have written down in history books. And Göbekli Tepe is a very significant point of archaeology, because we didn't find it not too long ago, and it's really making a lot of people rethink
about history. 25 years, I think that was the number.
And, years ago. You know, the whole advanced civilization talk is now not as far-fetched. There's more people believing that there was advanced civilizations. There's more people believing that there was more than one flood, that there was multiple ends of worlds, or the greater Dias theory. Greater,
yes, I know what you're talking about.
The greater that there was more than one, and they've even found watermarks on the pyramids. Joey and I have touched on that. But Graham Hancock's theory is there's been more than one great flood. I think it's called the Greater Dias theory.
Greater Dias. You might be right. Hold on, I'm gonna pull it up right
and,
now.
And you know, he's saying there's more than one. Some people said there was only one, but there's a lot of theories out there that
younger Dryas boundary event. That's one of them. So it's probably Dryas is the phrase Dryas.
Right. So Graham Hancock is saying that there's been more than one, and there's been advanced civilizations rebuilding and knowing this stuff. It's a rabbit hole, man. But at the end of the day, advanced civilizations really isn't as far-fetched. And if you could listen to Graham Hancock, or you're one of these people like us, Joey, Nick, and I, we're kind of middle with everything. We listen to both sides. If you're a person that's one-sided and you say, you know what, I'll give it a shot. Let's listen to the other side and see what, you might be intrigued. I never watched Ancient Aliens before until Joey put me onto it. And then I watched it and I was like, wow, that really makes me think of things different that I thought in history were factual. Like maybe it's not, you know, even though now Ancient Aliens is a little bit, it's a little too much now. I think they're running dry on material, but.
So it is called just for your listeners out there, it's called the Younger Dryas. And that was the last stage of the Pleistocene epoch that spanned from 2.5 million BC to about 11,900 BC. And it preceded the current warmer Holocene epoch, which is, so basically it's when we went into the last ice age and was coming out of the last ice age, and now we're in the warmer version of climate, which, just so we are understanding, the planet does go through cycles of cold and hot. I'm not saying climate change is not real. I am just saying that this is a naturally occurring thing that goes on in the planet.
Well, you know, Nick, people trust the science when it's convenient for them. Right. They don't want to trust the science on the earth changing naturally.
Right. Well, it's more about farting cows.
So. Right. Cows are, yeah, cows are, as we just spoke about today, that now all of a sudden, thousands of years later, cows are the problem for the earth. Just back in the 90s, it was hairspray and cars. Now it's cows.
And cars.
And cars. And cars now.
It's always cars. It's
cars and cows. So now we don't want to have, you know, farm life, and then they just literally
can go back to being hunter-gatherers.
Literally Google that they want us to eat bugs. It's out there. The article's out there.
Right, like, they want us to go back to being hunter-gatherers.
Sick.
Okay.
Sick. Anyways, with that being said.
We could do it.
Right. With that being said, Nick and I hope that we made Joey proud with this episode, and we hope he listens and gives his 2 cents to us via text and say, hey, you guys did a good job. Because he was the one that originally was going to lead the charge, because this is his forte. So we hope we made Joey proud, and we hope everyone listening to this episode was intrigued by Göbekli Tepe, and it was all made possible by Spotify for Podcasters. Spotify for Podcasters is the free app that allows you to get your podcasting idea
out there,
and it is completely free, and you can make money by using the app and getting your podcast idea out there. So if you have one and you need a way to learn how to do a podcast, and put it on outlets like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, and many others. Go to Spotify for Podcasters, download it, and see how to get started. Nick, excellent Nick notes today.
I did my best, Bill. I hope that these notes make Joey proud.
I hope the episode makes everybody proud. And hopefully Joey will join us next week. We'll touch base with him next week. We'll be like, Joey, you're good for today. Next week, real quick. We have Stephen Drury Phillips coming on, a crazy story, the first of its kind on this podcast, where we are genuinely having someone that experienced a traumatic event from a horrific, real-life monster. And it's a story that how someone can be on a high road and be broken by a traumatic event, a horrific event, and find his way through a troubling time because of that event, and then eventually make it right back onto the top and have a successful and spiritual life. So next week, we're going to introduce him on, and he's going to basically tell his story of what happened to him and a little bit about himself. If you haven't heard from him, he's a former professional tennis player. He's an active director now. He has a YouTube video, so you're going to hear all about this crazy story next week on that episode of the Say What Again, Billy podcast. So I hope everyone's prepared for that. Nick, thanks again for coming on tonight.
Thanks for having me, Billy.
You got to work on a monologue for next week.
Aye.
This guy, I love having him on because he does a very good job. And it alleviates the workload that I had, which was a lot. Because people don't think that, you know, they've been hearing Nick now for a couple of weeks, right? And they're like, oh, he knows a lot of stuff. Listen, it takes a lot to do what I do on Instagram, making reels, promoting website, picking the topics, talking to people. And when we get to the subject of paranormal, like you guys heard the entire spooky season, right? That's where I know my forte. That's where I do a little bit of my research, but it's all up here when I had that subject, UFO, aliens, ghosts, cryptids, it's all up here. When it comes to other subjects that need a little bit of history digging, Nick is my Indiana Jones. He goes to the library, he does his research, he presents the notes, and we're good to go. But Nick, thank you for a very good Nick's notes today on Göbekli Tepe. And until next week's Nick notes. Well, it won't be that much of Nick's notes at all next week, really. It's going to be a really different episode and a special guest. But until next time, this has been another episode of the Say What Again?
Billy Podcast.